The Health Policy Commission is sort of at the hub of healthcare reform activities here in Massachusetts now. We were founded out of this law, Chapter 224, of last summer. We are the newest and smallest state agency in Massachusetts right now. We are all of 26 people. We exist as an independent state agency, which is a bit of a unique structure for how healthcare and health policy are operationalized in Massachusetts. We work for, though we are all state employees per se, we work for a board of 11 independent experts who span the gamut of, as Celia noted, labor to health economists, to providers, to other consumer advocates and the like, and provides a very unique opportunity to engage directly with experts in the as the policymakers around moving forward this grand experiment of healthcare in Massachusetts. I'm going to take a slightly different tack at looking at how we got here, although thinking more about some of the drivers of cost containment. This is one of my favorite slides. I think that it speaks both to me as somebody who in the past years has negotiated the Massachusetts state budget, as well as to especially consumers and business owners across the Commonwealth. This is looking at, on the left-hand side of the slide here, the column. Can folks hear me in the back if I step away? Yes? Okay. Looking at the left-hand side of the column here, you can see the total expenditure by the Commonwealth over the last decade on healthcare services. This is our Group Insurance Commission, the entity that provides healthcare services to Massachusetts employees. This is Medicaid and other public expenditures of healthcare dollars. And you can see on the right-hand side of the slide a series of key resources and services that we all expect of a functioning economy, of a functioning state government in public health, mental health, education, infrastructure, and so on. You can see that as healthcare costs have continued to skyrocket in Massachusetts, going up by almost 60% over the last decade, that each and every one of those other services that we expect to wrap around to provide supports to these patients, to those who are receiving services in the Commonwealth, have decreased sequentially and substantially. While we may have the ability to provide direct clinical services, we don't have the ability to sustain to the level of efforts necessary, public health, transportation, education, all of those things that wrap around and provide that whole picture. And this in and of itself, where healthcare now accounts for 40% of the Massachusetts state budget, was that continued call to action for how we got to the point of cost containment efforts. As Celia noted, we spend quite a bit more than the national average on healthcare costs. We also spend more than those who have engaged in significant transformation activities. When we look at comparator states like New York, California, Illinois, those who are engaged in significant transformation like Oregon, Minnesota, Maine, we continue to outspend them and significantly. This figure varies depending on who reports it, but we account for almost a 36% difference between us and the nation. Celia's touched on this, so I'm just going to keep walking through. To overview Chapter 224, as Celia noted, it's an incredibly busy and complex body of legislation. It is 350 pages in total and runs the gamut from medical malpractice reforms to significant investments in a variety of elements of healthcare, as I'll talk about more in a minute. It focuses on a variety of activities around system integration, thinking about comprehensive payment reforms both immediately through public payers, that's not what I wanted to do, as well as downstream in building research models within our agency, within another agency that I'll touch upon in a moment. Thinking about first and foremost through all of these activities, transparency, 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 and that's really where my agency comes to play. There's a big and open philosophical question in Massachusetts about whether transparency is enough. To the teeth that Celia noted, simply putting out information and real solid good information that's focused at policy stakeholders and at consumers alike, will that be sufficient to drive the sorts of changes that we seek to see in our system? We don't know the answer to that question, but that really is the underpinning of 224, is an assumption that a build towards transparency, that a concerted effort of the market, both on the payer and provider side, towards cost containment was already in the works and is necessary from an economic perspective. There is a significant focus on things like health information technology, on public health through a variety of activities around prevention and wellness, thinking about the ways that health insurance is designed and putting certain constraints on those designs, and starting to think very clearly about activities such as health resource planning to understand that where we are an incredibly concentrated healthcare marketplace here in Massachusetts, where our bed capacity of hospitals exceeds that any other state in the nation, but where we have significant capacity gaps in things like behavioral health and other services that are essential for those same patients, thinking about right-sizing the system. The four key strategies, as I've touched upon, are thinking about ways that we transform care delivery, getting patients out of hospitals and into community settings, focusing on integrated, coordinated systems of care. reforming the way that we pay for care. Celia touched upon Medicaid payment reform activities. There are a variety of activities as well, both on a research agenda side as well as on an operational side, whereby our agency is required to develop new payment models for things like patient-centered medical homes and accountable care organizations, with the intent of providing incentives to those organizations to deliver more appropriate care in the right ways. Developing a value-based healthcare market, this really is the crux of that transparency question. If we can start to provide real, meaningful information to patients on cost and quality, on the impacts of market changes, can we start to see more value in the way that the market self-corrects over time with a helping hand from government? And engaging purchasers through a variety of tools around information and incentives. I'll offer one correction to Celia and one that I think you love, which is that on October 1st, our transparency tools around health insurance actually went live. So in Massachusetts now, in theory, and there is varying success of this, a patient can go to any health insurance carrier and require that they provide them information on costs prior to going in to receive some episode of care. It's clunky. It takes some time. There are a variety of activities underway to try and enhance those tools. But there is that legal authority now for a patient to call up their health insurance company and say, I want to know how much that MRI is going to cost on my knee tomorrow. There also, beginning on January 1st, will be the same authority with providers, where a patient can pick up the phone and call a provider and require the same information of them. These are by no means perfect, and we will continue to have to refine these things. My wife is here. My wife's a physician at a community hospital. I can't imagine a patient calling her up right now and saying, how much is my inpatient admission for an appendectomy going to cost? We aren't there yet, but that is what we're working towards. The core of all of this is the healthcare cost growth target. So there was in all of the political negotiation that went on through the development of Chapter 224, this is probably the crux of it all, that there was an agreement in law that healthcare cost growth in Massachusetts shouldn't exceed the growth of our economy. That's tied to 3.6% over the next 2 years, but our agency, in conjunction with another agency that I'll talk about more in a moment, is tasked with the role of both setting this benchmark on an annualized basis as well as reporting on the Commonwealth's ability to meet the benchmark. This is not intended to be a provider-specific benchmark or a payer-specific benchmark, but there are tools in the law that allow us to identify certain payers or providers that are substantially contributing to us exceeding this growth rate if we do so, and allows us the authority to put in place things called performance improvement plans, where we can require a given provider or payer to adhere to a certain set of activities to come into line with this benchmark. This healthcare cost growth benchmark, as Celia touched upon, is built upon a new way of thinking about healthcare costs. We have been more evolved than much of the country over the last 8 years in thinking about what healthcare costs. We've started to think about the breakout of price and of utilization earlier than most have. We've also rolled those into a new calculation, or total medical expenditure, the calculation of the total all-in costs of receiving care. Those are all based upon a health insurance claim, and we all know that much of healthcare is delivered outside of that health insurance marketplace. And so a new calculation of total healthcare expenditures is intended to capture all of those other services, including things like the net cost of private insurance, what administrative overhead is in the insurance marketplace, all of those patient cost-sharing arrangements, co-payments, deductibles, so on and so forth, that we're seeing increasingly as tools being used to drive down costs that may or may not substantially disenfranchise those in most need of supports from the system. It's a fairly common story to hear, and Wendy can probably speak to this better than I, that a relatively low-income individual will be in a high-deductible health plan under that risk-based assumption that they are not receiving, that they're going to not need to use those healthcare services, and end up in a substantially challenged position economically. The total healthcare expenditure calculation, while it is certainly at a macro level, not at a patient-specific level, is intended to capture all of those wraparound costs and talk about what healthcare actually costs in Massachusetts. This slide didn't show up all that well, but one of the core elements of this is a Robin Hooding effect, if you will. One of the central elements of the law is that we took from those that have more in the system. Celia referred to a price disparity, to a revenue disparity in both our payer and our provider marketplace. We took from about $65 million from the largest providers in the Commonwealth and about $160 million from the largest payers in the Commonwealth and distributed, and are in the process of distributing those funds in a few different ways. One that you'll hear about more tomorrow from the Department of Public Health is the Prevention and Wellness Trust Fund. Commissioner Bartlett from that department is here to talk about that program. There are funding supports for health information technology, really focused in on things like behavioral health and post-acute, which we haven't thought about yet, but are essential elements of a wraparound system. In my own agency, this both supports our operations, so the healthcare marketplace is paying for us, we are not on the taxpayer's bill, as well as a significant investment in community health infrastructure. So we have about $120 million that I can talk about more in a moment, focused in on community hospitals in the Commonwealth, which, as we have seen the market evolve over the last decade or so, have been challenged in many cases to keep up with the larger academic players. The law also created two new implementing agencies, which I've touched upon. Us on the right, and I'm not going to walk through these activities, but suffice it to say we're the hub of policy development for Massachusetts around healthcare. I'll talk a little bit more about our structure and why I think that that's a very important lesson learned for other states in a moment. I also want to acknowledge Catherine West, who's in the back of the room, from our sister agency created out of this, the Center for Health Information and Analysis. A core element of this law was that there needed to be independence and transparency in the way that these activities were being led and assessed at the state level. So both our agency and that center were created as independent state agencies, not within the administration, but rather under a tripartite oversight of our state attorney general, our state auditor, and the governor. As I've noted, we have a board structure overseeing us. We're led by Dr. Stuart Altman, who is a former dean of the Heller School at Brandeis, and a variety of other individuals ranging from, as I said, labor to health economics to healthcare delivery providers and so on. This structure is very unique among those nationwide. Oregon has adopted this structure, and a handful of other states have as well. Having spent the last several years working in various agencies in Massachusetts, this shift, while internally may not seem significant, from an external stakeholder perspective is huge. And moving the oversight of healthcare in our interactions with providers, with payers, with other stakeholders in the system, outside of a typical government structure and into a setting in which there are experts providing direct oversight of our trajectory, has proven to be incredibly beneficial to both our relationships there and to setting the scope of our organization. I'm going to spend most of the rest of my time on this cycle, which is a bit complex, but it describes many of the activities within our agency that relate back to this law. We have a variety of functions that are around data in transparency tools that are intended to provide a variety of information points for the Commonwealth, for its stakeholders, around how we're thinking about healthcare cost containment, quality improvement, and access enhancement. We are thinking about access quite a bit, despite the fact that it isn't central to this law, in the sense that we're thinking about access not so much around insurance coverage anymore, but around where patients are receiving services, thinking about things like behavioral health especially, where although we have managed to provide decent access to things like primary care and excellent access to hospital care, we really have as yet not solved the behavioral health problem that folks are facing from across the country. Second, we have a very interesting tool here in Massachusetts. Those of you who work in healthcare know that the way that provider organizations are structured and the way that those relationships influence the way that care is provided are astounding. We're working to develop a first-in-the-nation relational database, and not to sound too wonky, but a database that captures the intersection of each of these provider organizations, how they communicate with one another, what their contracts are between each other that guide patient referral patterns, patient flow, trying to really seek to understand those relationships around how patients have increasingly over the last decade especially ended up transitioning from low-cost settings to high-cost settings, what the contractual mechanisms are, what the incentives are for negotiations with payers, to understand exactly what those drivers are and to be able to report on that publicly. A second function that I'll dive into in a bit more depth in a moment is cost and market impact reviews. This is a tool that we use to assess the cost impact, the market impact, and the quality impact of every transaction that comes before us in the Commonwealth. We also have an all-payer claims database that we are about to start reporting on. We've been doing all-payer claims work in Massachusetts now for about 3 years, but as yet that has not been used as a tool by which we can start to do cross-payer examinations of things like cost and quality. But we will be in the next 6 weeks starting to report on data out of the all-payer claims database. I've touched on health resource planning, and I just want to note also that engaged in central to all of this is an information point around patient protection. We have a very interesting office around working to negotiate consumer complaints around denials with health insurance. Again, here too, a common theme that you hear is behavioral health. We've looked at our claims over the last 3 years, and astoundingly, those denials are more than 60% behavioral health. Those that are reversed are almost 80% behavioral health. And so here, too, we have a significant challenge that's facing a certain subpopulation in access to care and access to health insurance coverage. All of this evidence base around investment spits out in our work through a series of policy recommendations. We have a required role to play annually in making policy recommendations to other agencies in the Commonwealth as well as to the legislature, as well as building out certain certification and investment programs that I'll talk about in a second. As we think about these activities, when I've touched upon transparency in some depth, we also have a series of activities around setting forward new standards for how care is structured and delivered. Among those is the development of certification programs for patient-centered medical homes and for accountable care organizations. PCMH has happened in many other states. I think we're the 16th or 17th state to develop a certification program. We're not new to the table here, although Massachusetts has been doing PCMH work for a number of years. We are somewhat unique in that we have the ability in our law to develop a model payment that goes along with patient-centered medical homes that sets these organizations up once they have engaged in this process of being certified by our agency to receive a different type of payment from commercial healthcare payers. We believe that this, in building into a certification program around accountable care organizations, which is absolutely novel. We are among the first in the nation to do accountable care organization certification, really defining and setting standards for what an ACO is. We're all talking about them. I had a conversation with a friend who was in town for this conference the other evening about whether ACOs are the answer to healthcare reform, and it starts with defining what an ACO is. Most states haven't gone down that pathway of actually stepping back and trying to design this in a way that supports care delivery in an optimal way. Our law provides for us stepping back and setting those standards, setting that framework. We also, and I've noted this just briefly, have core investments around community hospitals. Community hospitals have been just devastated in Massachusetts over the last 8 years by payment disparities, by a shifting of patients towards academic medical centers for routine procedures, for routine care, that leaves these communities that do have critical needs in areas such as behavioral health, you know, general internal medicine, general surgery, emergency services, without the ability to provide a sustainable care. They're challenged, their age of physical plant is incredibly old, and yet the care that patients receive in these settings by all available public quality measures continues to be about as good as it is downtown. One of the activities in 224 is starting to provide some impetus to shifting that dynamic. We have about $120 million over the next 4 years to invest in certain community hospitals that are relatively low cost, that are nonprofit, and that are non-teaching hospitals to try and really help define what a new mode of community healthcare is in Massachusetts. This isn't intended to be a bailout by our legislature, but rather a real redesign of what community hospital care is. We also, as Celia just briefly noted on, and I'll end in a moment after this, have a fascinating and really important role in thinking about how our market is continuing to shift. Many have said to us that we're a little bit late to the table here, that Massachusetts has already consolidated, which is somewhat true, but there does continue to be an unprecedented amount of activity. Since we began this work in March of this year, we have seen more than almost 20 transactions come before us with people seeking to acquire or to merge with other healthcare organizations to shift their affiliations. You can see here a breakdown of what types of transactions those are. What we do in these instances is we have the ability to say, let's take a step back. We do not have a regulatory authority to stop a transaction from moving forward, but do have a very interesting authority to require that those provider organizations wait at least approximately 6 months to complete a transaction, during which time we have full authority to subpoena any information we want to from those organizations, the ability to require, to compel information from healthcare payers, from other provider organizations, and to do an in-depth examination of elements around cost, elements around quality, and elements around market impact. This is somewhat similar in many ways to an antitrust examination. Are healthcare organizations getting too big? The core of this law, though, is that antitrust over the last decades has been generally a non-transparent process. Unless a complaint is filed in court as healthcare organizations get bigger and bigger, which usually is not the case in that it is incremental growth, nobody ever knows that this examination is going on. And the results of that examination, even if they may be concerning from a policy perspective, are not released to the public. This is entirely a transparency tool. We do not have the ability to stop transactions from moving forward, but do have the ability to report, and to report in very meaningful ways, on the real direct and projected indirect impacts of a given transaction. Finally, as Celia noted, cost trends hearings in Massachusetts have been ongoing for some time. This is now a responsibility that lives with us. As Celia also noted, people don't like this. We have a very interesting authority, along with our sister agencies at the Attorney General's Office and at the Center, to require that any Massachusetts market participant that we see fit appear before us once a year to testify on any factor that we see fit under oath regarding their cost performance, their quality performance, their organizational structure, their plans, so on and so forth. We also built into this have the ability to require that they provide written information regarding that testimony. We have, for example, this year required significant information on the overall cost structures of organizations, trying to understand where their money is flowing within a healthcare provider, thinking about revenues across different payment types, thinking more and more about things like alternative payment models. This continues to be a process that our market participants don't enjoy, but is one of the most important tools that we have in our repertoire to really build transparency deep into these organizations, to be able to have the CEOs of these payers and providers sit before us and answer heated questions in a public setting.
And it's fun.
And that builds into to our annualized reporting process, and I'm not going to talk about this much, but I do want to just note a couple of slides that capture, again, this distinction between us and the nation. In our most recent update at our cost trends hearings about a month ago, we provided the following few slides. We noted that healthcare in Massachusetts, which we already know is about 36% in aggregate overall over the country, is very interesting in the ways that it's more expensive, much more expensive with regard to hospital care, exponentially more expensive with regard to long-term care. What component of that is price versus quantity, we're still examining, but it's very striking that we spend more than twice the nation on long-term care. Interestingly, despite the consolidation of physicians in Massachusetts, we spend less on doctors themselves. We spend less on sort of professional fees, as we consider them, or professional services. And we spend a good bit less, not than the nation, but as a relativity difference, on drugs and medical durables. They tend to pretty much trend to the nation. We also are very interesting in the trend that we're seeing towards alternative payment models. We're all talking a lot about alternative payments across the country, thinking about things like moving towards risk, global budgets, and so on. We see now in Massachusetts that more than 30% of overall payments in the commercial market is now in alternative payments. This is almost entirely global budgets. We don't really have any bundled payments or other alternative models in the market right now. And this provides both a great deal of opportunity, we think, to start to ratchet in budgets, but also a potential concern in that as we are working to bring more and more transparency, we really don't know what underlies these budgets. It presents a whole new set of complicating factors around things like incentive payments to providers, bonuses that are paid out, infrastructure payments, and so presents a very interesting, again, opportunity to bring some transparency to the way that healthcare is structured and paid for. And finally, I'll go ahead and skip to the next one. I want to leave you with the fact that for whatever reason, healthcare growth in Massachusetts is starting to slow, or has slowed, rather, over the last four or so years. We're not seeing as rapid growth compared to the nation as we have. That gap is starting to close. Is that simple economic fluctuation? It's too soon to tell. Do we want to read too much into this slide? Absolutely not. Is this the impact of Chapter 224? No. This comes before Chapter 224. But maybe, just maybe, some of the things that we're starting to hear from providers, from payers, around the activities that they're engaged in to contain costs are starting to have some impact. Hard to know, but offers some opportunity for continued examination. So with that, I will stop and turn it back. Thank you.